Good morning, Tucson. Yes, you just tuned in to Jump in Tucson, and I am Ted Maxwell. Behind the glass with me today is Matt Neely, and we are here to try to encourage you to get engaged. That's what we should do as citizens in our communities to make them better, to support those, to get involved, be educated voters, and take our civic responsibilities seriously. So today I'm honored to have with me somebody who has a long history of civic and community engagement, probably a lot deeper than many of us know. I know every time I take a look at her bio on the website, I learn something new. So I'm honored to be joined this morning by Jan Lesher, the Pima County Administrator. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Ted. I'm so honored to be invited to be with you today. Thank you.
Yeah, she's saying that in a nice way because the truth of the matter is the other day I was getting ready to start a show and she showed up and I had to apologize because I had given her the wrong date. So I appreciate your being flexible and understanding.
And you brought treats. On with that. That's all right. There's baked goods here today.
There's always
I'll
a little
go
bit.
Almost anywhere.
There's almost always a little bit of sucking up when you're the one that's just messed up.
Not a problem.
So, well, I appreciate you being with us. And
Thank you.
A lot of times I like to do a lot of talking about my guests and what they've done, but I want to leave a little bit of it up to you because this is about trying to tell stories mm-hmm. about how people got engaged, either with their community through public service, and public service can be, you know, as a first responder, as an educator, as part of the military, working inside the government, but mm-hmm. effectively doing work that impacts the community. And you've done that most of your life. But what I think, don't know if everybody knows, is you were Tucson born and raised. So can you tell us a little bit about growing up in Tucson and how you ended up eventually getting involved in public service?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a Tucson native. I'm a third generation Tucsonan. My grandfather came to Arizona to start at the University of Arizona in 1914. Graduated in 1917. I'm actually the third of four generations of U of A alum. But he met my grandmother, who also, I think the amazing part, had taken a steamer around from the East Coast and also showed up at the U of A in 1914. And they met and married. She took a little break while she raised a family and then went back when she was 40 and went back to the U of A and got her degree at that time. But my grandfather then went on to be the tennis coach and the registrar of the U of A. So there's a long history of bleeding, I think, red and blue. I graduated from Sam Hughes, Mansfield, Tucson High, University of Arizona. So for those who are familiar with the Tucson area, it's pretty much my entire educational career is in about a one-mile radius, I think, up and down the middle of town. And I think for me, Ted, when I was a kid, my dad was very active with and spent a little time chairing the Republican Party. And one of his best friends was a guy named Richard Kleindienst, who was at one point the Attorney General of the United States, ran for governor. But the first time I went door-to-door on my bicycle in a political campaign was in 1964. And so I had a, you know, it was a, so there are people doing math right now. And yes, I am also old. But it's the way my family was raised. You know, we got involved. And I think one of the wonderful things that has taught me is that it means I have family members. I've spent my entire life being in a family with people I love and admire, with whom I don't share the same necessary political affiliation or opinion. And so what I've been blessed with is a lifetime of dinner table debates and conversations and chats, and then never having to take any of it personally. You know, you appreciate that kind of involvement. And that's the way I was raised. You know, we began involvement in nonprofit organizations, groups. My first job, I was 15. I started at the Baskin Robbins. That was right over by Himmel Park. Some people know
there
it.
You
it's
go.
Speedway, just east of Tucson Boulevard. And I'm one of those incredibly fortunate people who have been employed since then. Different jobs along the way, but I've had an opportunity to work in public sector, private sector. I owned my own business for a dozen years. But through it all, I was just raised to then participate. So whether it be the food bank or behavioral health groups, economic development, we've always had a community, a commitment to being involved.
Well, and that's, like I said, every time I look at your bio, or, and I strongly recommend, if you're interested to learn more about Jan, to go to the bio that's posted on the PAG website. It's got a lot of good information, especially about your community involvement. And, you know, everybody obviously now recognizes you as the county administrator, but you've been involved in this community through nonprofits and others.
Sure.
The part that you haven't mentioned yet is that you worked with Governor Napolitano mm-hmm. in multiple roles.
I did, Ted, and that's actually when I owned my business. I had it for, as I say, about 12 years, and then Janet Napolitano was elected governor, and I made the decision at that time to get out of the business and go to work for her. I started with Governor Napolitano initially running the Southern Arizona office, which I tell people, you know, look at, it was Steve Jewett before me, Betsy Boulding, Jim Cowan, Juan Siscomani, you know, there's been quite a list of individuals who've been blessed with that job. And I tell folks, it's the best job they're ever going to have, with all due respect to the county and everybody else, because the job is to work with about seven southern counties. So you're in some beautiful part of Arizona 2 to 3 days a week. You're working in Phoenix 2 to 3 days a week, and your home is in Tucson. So that's a great, great gig. I then went on, and then that's when I then moved to Phoenix and became the director of the Department of Commerce. I was with the Department of Commerce for a while, and then moved over and was chief of staff for Governor Napolitano. And that was the position I was in when she became the Secretary of Homeland Security. So I went with her to D.C. as chief of staff for the Department of Homeland Security. I told her I'd go for a year. I was there about 15 months. It kept snowing, and I decided it was a really good time to come on back to my hometown.
Well, I think that was a good call on your part. as well, you can hear it in your voice. You talked about your affiliation and love of Tucson and this region, growing up here, mm-hmm. obviously getting involved at a young age. It only made sense, I think, for you to come back. You've gotten drug up to Phoenix, experienced that, and then you really did the tough job, and then went to D.C., and I 15 months is overtime.
Well, I think like everybody, everyone I know, we fly into D.C., and as that plane lands, and you're looking out at the memorials and the monuments and thinking about the history and getting goosebumps about what it means for our government, the idea to have an opportunity to work there was extraordinary. And for the 240,000 men and women in the Department of Homeland Security, it was a wonderful opportunity. At that time, then Secretary Napolitano was only the third secretary. And so we worked in a building where it was actually an old girls' school that had been closed for Christmas when World War II started. And so became then a little military facility. But when you walk up and down a hall to get to work every day, going past pictures of the Twin Towers and of what happened on 9/11, there's a moment where it comes back to your foundation, and you remember exactly why you're doing what you're doing every day.
And that's a great place to leave for our first break. Before we come back, we've kind of set the table to come back and talk about what your work in Pima County, which all that experience, especially with the DHS, has probably benefited you in a long way. So I'm Ted Maxwell. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I've got Matt Neely still finding some of the finest Springsteen tunes to play on in my lead-ins. And we're with Jan Lesher, the Pima County Administrator, and something that she did leave out of her bio, but I wouldn't have expected her to put into it, because I didn't know that you were the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce Woman of the Year in 2005.
You know, Ted, thank you. It has taken me a moment to realize that was almost 20 years ago. And so not quite, but jeepers, 2005. Yeah, it was a wonderful group. Jeepers with our rugby playing friend, Dave Sutton.
Dave Sutton.
Great
Absolutely.
Guy. So we were blessed to be there together that year. It was wonderful.
Oh, that's I did not know that was the same year. Dave, congratulations on that. Dave did so much
super
incredible
guy.
Things
we
for this community.
And
some people forgot that he also even started American Warrior Radio, which is an incredible show hosted by Ben Bueller Garcia now. It's great. And I just wanted to make sure everybody understood. You know, yeah, I was talking about going back to D.C. being a problematic place, but I've spent much of my life working in D.C. too, and it is an experience, and we need good, solid leaders and folks willing to take that move, but there's also a lot of things to be said about coming home.
Oh, yeah.
So when you came home in 2010, you started your career, I guess.
That's
we could
right.
say your second career, maybe your third, mm-hmm. whatever career you want to count it at, within Pima County. So can you just tell
sure.
us a little bit about your transition into Pima County?
Sure. When I came back and was considering starting the business up again that I had before my entree into politics, and started talking with Chuck Huckleberry about some visions he had for the county and things he could do. So I started with him early in 2010, and then we started a communications office, moved a few things around, and then there was a retirement soon thereafter, so I moved into a deputy county administrator position in 2011. Served that in that role, working with a variety of different departments, learning about the county, moved into a chief deputy position, and happened to be in that position when Chuck Huckleberry was hit by a car on his bicycle, as many people remember, in October of 21. And as many of us have discussed, I think they said, always, Ted, you and I've talked about it. I said, there's only one job in the whole world I would never, ever want. And that's the poor soul that has to be the county administrator after Chuck Huckleberry.
there's no doubt. And, if people were, you know, fans of Chuck's or not, he held his line, but if there's something that needed to get done in this community, Chuck could yep. be the one that quite often the everybody would have to work
done.
Through.
He could get it
and
done.
He could get
yeah.
it done.
And the reality, he was with the county for 41 years. He was the county administrator for 29.
That's amazing.
So just the institutional history is astonishing.
So what was stepping into those shoes? Obviously, it was in a tragic situation, not an mm-hmm. easy one to move into. It was about 8 months or so before they named you as the permanent leader.
October
in April.
Into April, yep.
yep.
And
so.
I think, well, it's the teachable moment, I think, Ted, for everyone to think about, that Chuck walked out on a Friday afternoon with his briefcase. We were texting that night because Saturday was a football game. What was he going to do? And then we were already texting about some issues that we had to deal with the next Monday back at the, it went back to work at the county, and it was Saturday morning I got a call about the accident. So it was just, you know, it's that reminder that we need to do everything we want to do, because you just don't know when that's going to be over.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I think that next challenge then, I mean, I was fortunate enough at that point that I had been with the county a few years and had been as the chief deputy. It was up to me to cover if Chuck was on vacation or something, but make no mistake, people always look to Chuck. So I think in the beginning it was simply a job of keeping the trains moving, you know, letting people know that government wasn't going to fall apart, that there were things that were in the works that we were going to continue. We have an extraordinary team at the county, and I'm blessed now. We have three deputy county administrators. Many of your listeners have worked with one or all. Carmine DeBonis, who's our public works guy, has been with the county since he started working for Supervisor Ed Moore a long, long time ago, and knows more about development services and such than just about anybody ever. Dr. Francisco Garcia, who helped get us through a pandemic and a few other issues. And the latest addition, the gentleman who I hired to take my old spot, Steve Holmes. Again, many people know Steve from his time as superintendent at the Sunnyside School District. A bit of a challenging job. So it's an incredible bench. We have many outstanding directors. And I think so much of it was initially just reminding our workforce that everything was going to be okay, and the community as well. To step back, if I might, for a second, I think to put some of that year in context, Pima County, as I say, Chuck had been there for 29 years. The board really did not turn over very much. We had, as I recall...
No, that's true. That board was yeah. the same board for a long time.
We had never had more than one board member change at a time for 20-plus years. And in October of 2020, we had three new board members. So a majority of the board was elected. We had individuals such as Barbara LaWall, F.N. Rodriguez, couple of our, you know, the county recorder, the county attorney, who had been with us for almost 30 years, each of them, well, they decided to stand down. So we had three new board members, two new we call them row officers, but, you know, extraordinary positions of power within Pima County. Oh, and then, by the way, Chuck got hurt. So it was some time of real change. And we were still in the pandemic. For us, when the new board came together and was seated in early of 21, the meetings were still remote.
Yeah,
we have five individuals working together, some of whom who had never met in person for months after they started working together. And I think it's hard to remember those times. I think for meetings and things that we were used to doing personally and then in person, that shifted to virtual was okay, because you know what somebody, how to read a body language, you know what they might be thinking, you know what's going on. To get to know people in a virtual environment is a bit of a challenge too.
I think it's one of the biggest changes that have come out of that time. I mean, yes, there's some business efficiencies and some board efficiencies that you can do having that online remote access available. Mm-hmm. But how do you go about building a culture? So here's the environment you just took over.
Yeah.
And I'd say you have already put your footprint on Pima County. That's not the board. The board's a separate thing, but Pima County itself, you've got new hires in there. You've had an opportunity now coming out of that culture of a lot more remote workers, a lot more challenges. How have you been able to imprint, besides some of the great hires you've gotten in your deputy director positions, how have you been able to imprint your idea for what the role of the county administration office is?
I think the county had done an extraordinary job with some of what I think of external facing issues. We've had critical infrastructure. You know, we've been building new things. We had new involvement. We were turning the corner, I think, trying to get the roads fixed at that time. But it was a time to really shift and focus on our county. Within county government a little bit, in a couple of ways. We looked first at how we were treating our employees. We are only as good as our employees, true of any organization, and we've spent some time going through a full analysis of classification and compensation, make sure that we're in line with the market, which it's not just like going out and give everyone a couple percent raise. You're going in and touching each one of those employees individually to understand where they fit in a system. We looked at our benefits package. We looked at, you know, what's possible to take care of our employees. We had about 22% turnover rate. We're now running less than 12. So turnover is expensive. We are seeing a huge uptick in applicants for each position. So those sorts of internal issues are important. We've also really tried to focus on changing some of the fiscal ways we do business and making them into board policy. And by that, the fund balance in order to keep our credit rating going. Things that are not terribly exciting or fun to talk about, but are very significant. And we've established those dollars as real board policy so that it can be easy to look at $100 million sitting in a bank and think, let's go buy some things, let's go do things. Well, when you're at $1.8 billion, that $100 million is what we need just to make sure that we're able to do things cost effectively, keep our credit rating, things of that nature. So it's important that we not eat the seed cord, if you will. So we're looking at just how we do some of those financial issues and trying to make them in policy for a go forward. Again, when you've got people around, when the board's been there for 30 years and the county administrator's been there for 30 years, you just, things operate out of muscle memory, you know, and we need to make sure that things are established within the organization.
So how would you say that, or would you define how the role of administrator has changed currently than what it was in that time of 30 years of consistent, personnel, board members, and an administrator that had been there for 29 years. So how would you say the role's different now from the time you took it over from Chuck?
I think one of the things that we do differently is I would say, it goes back to, as you mentioned, everybody knows if you want to get something done, you went to Chuck. And we have, in effect, I would say, diffused power a bit. There's a lot of entry points into the county to get something done and not just one. I hope people know they can always call me, but there's a lot more people involved in those processes. And that's just not because of a change in Chuck. That's a change in a new world order. I think people want to be involved and participate.
Absolutely. I think it's good for the community as well. It's definitely good for your organization. You know, like you said, Chuck could get things done. Everybody knew that. Now it's going to rely a little bit more on regional cooperation, and that's one of the issues we'll talk when we come back after the break. So that's the voice of Jan Lesher, the Pima County Administrator. I'm Ted Maxwell. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be back after the break. Good morning, and welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and with me, I've got Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher. Appreciate the conversation, but now we're going to start talking about issues, and we're going to do something we don't always do on this show. We're going to throw it out to a caller. We've got Rick on line one, or I guess line could be line two as well. Rick, you've got a quick question for the administrator.
Prior to COVID, the Pima County Library System was open 7 days a week. Almost all libraries were open on Saturday. Libraries were open on Sunday for more than half a day. Now, if a library is open on Saturday, it's closed on Monday. They used to be open till 8 o'clock. Now they close at 6. There's a big reduction in library hours. Why is it that that's never come back to the regular hours? And if you're not going to bring those hours back, why don't you do a corresponding and correlating reduction in my property taxes? Because my property taxes have gone up year after year. Every 6 months, I go down to the Pima County building and write a check. And every year, my property taxes go up and up and up. And I would think if there's some savings there, such as the library system, when you've reduced all these services and you haven't returned the services, that there would be a corresponding reduction in my property taxes. But my property taxes continue to go up. So I just wonder why, and if you're ever going to bring the service back, because I do use the library. I do not have internet or TV at my house, and I read a lot. So can you please answer that? Thank you.
So, Rick, thank you for the question, and I think the administrator will challenge the library issue. The board is the one on the property tax issue.
Thank you. And the library district actually is its own taxing district. But I think what you mentioned, Rick, is I will tell you it's a great challenge for us right now. And I think particularly in our libraries, we face the challenge that many businesses are facing today, which is not having enough staff. And that when we, there was a period of time, particularly when, as you know, libraries were closed, we were doing things electronically. There's a different model of how libraries are working. And we lost some of the individuals who actually work in those library branches. With limited staff, when we don't have enough people to fill each branch 7 days a week as we would like, what we've done is try to make sure that there is a library open every day within a reasonable geographic area. So if maybe the library that you're used to using is closed on a Sunday, I hope that you'll find another one that is within another few miles that is open on a Sunday to complement and support that other branch until we can get really fully staffed back up. I know, ask just about every business in town, restaurants, we'd all be doing better right now if we could hire those folks up, but I certainly appreciate that call.
So thank you, Rick. Appreciate the call. Library is kind of an infrastructure topic. It's the goods and services that are provided to the citizens. And you said one of the things, and I've heard you say it a couple times, is you're really concerned about the critical infrastructure in our region. And can you talk a little bit about that and how you think the county, what the role the county can play in addressing that?
A couple of angles for the critical infrastructure, Ted. And yes, you've heard me talk about it a lot. I worry a great deal. The county, like most of our jurisdictional partners in this area, has had as a habit going out to the voters for bond elections every few years. And that's the way we built critical infrastructure. I think about it. 1997, there were two bonds that year, general obligation and roads, totaling over $700 million in 97. So imagine today's dollars. 2004 was over $500 million. 2006, some minor improvements to the behavioral health facility. And since then, we have passed one bond election, which was one $22 million bond for an animal care facility. Other requests for bonds to deal with critical infrastructure have been summarily rejected by voters in this region. We also recognized at that point, obviously, we had a significant problem with roads in an unincorporated Pima County. So developed a mechanism by which we were using a percent of increased assessed valuation, as well as the dollars that we were saving by not paying off bond debt, goes to a pay-as-you-go method primarily focused initially on fixing the roads. And I'll tell you what I hear these days when I go out to public meetings, asking about roads in unincorporated Pima County was always the number one issue. And it's not one that we are hearing as much anymore. I'm not going to say we have every road fixed, but they're in a lot better shape than they were $150 million ago. But now there's other critical infrastructure. People have been talking about the need for a new jail. Don't know that we need a new jail, but we do need some attention paid to deferred maintenance. When I look at buildings in the downtown area, there's deferred maintenance, significant deferred maintenance in some of our county buildings because we have been, again, focused on roads. And then add to that parks, you know, some of the amenities that people in our community want to see. We run the wastewater treatment facility. We run the flood control district. That is all critical infrastructure. We also built and operate the Pima County Wireless Integrated Network, which is our way for all of our first responders in the area to continue to communicate. So some pretty significant work. So two things, I think, related to that. One, as we move forward, the county's going to need to think again about bonds at some point, you know, in the next couple of years. But we then need to look at RTA next. And I the two interrelate in many ways, and that, as Ted, I think you know, I meet regularly with the managers of the other jurisdictions. And one of the things we've been trying to look at is what are we asking of voters when? I know Sarita is going out for a bond at the end of this year. I think it's $66 million. Mm-hmm. None of us want to step on that. You know, that's great news for Tom Murphy and Shane Dilley and our friends down in the Sarita area. Let that pass. If we go forward, how does that line up with what we hope will be? And Mr. Chairman of the RTA, I think we're possibly May of next year. So if we're looking at May of 25 to reboot the Regional Transportation Authority, which I think is critically needed, how do we draft behind that, if you will? How do we make sure that the needs of our parts of unincorporated Pima County do not in any way interfere with what other jurisdictions may be needing as well? Or how are we complementing the regional authority?
And I do think the pay-go system for the roads has been very widely appreciated because it answers the questions. Okay, you get state funding, you get VLT money, you get other funds. And so why aren't those funds going to the roads? And I think that the county is addressing that. And it's been well received, and you've seen the impact. And I think that's going to continue. My question on the bonds will be, historically, Pima County, and this is historically, long before you were in charge, the bonds were seen as Christmas trees.
Absolutely.
And what you're talking about is very specific critical infrastructure needs, and they're all in line. It's going to be the prioritization of those needs and the ability, I think, to go with a bond for the specific issue. Yeah. So you mentioned a bunch of them. If one critical need other than RTA next, we'll get to that. But other than what's the one you think that the board needs to consider going forward?
Again, transportation aside, I think we need to look at simply the deferred maintenance of our existing county buildings and some of the buildings. I'll tell you, we need to look at the jail. We have some people who think we are never going to have a jail in the community and we don't need one. Unfortunately, we're going to get to that point. There will be a jail. Is it different? Do we operate it differently? Do we all hope there's fewer people in it? Do we hope there's wraparound services to provide help to people so that they don't go back to jail? Yes. That's when we began with the Blue Ribbon Commission to just look initially, what's a new jail? That's $800 million. Right. You know, so these are big numbers we need to look at. What I'm sort of dreaming about is what is the footprint of the county in the downtown area? As we all come back from the pandemic, work offices look very different. You know, it's not a one-to-one ratio of a person in an office. You don't establish your sense of power within an organization by the size of your office. So as the main building that county has been in, 130 West Congress, has been empty. We are doing significant renovation, asbestos removal, et cetera. When we move people back into the building, we're calling it, it's like the Tetris game. You know, how does everyone fit back in there?
Right.
My hope is that when all that's said and done, we end up with at least one, if you will, extra building that we can then sell, get back on the tax rolls, use as, you know, what is going on for that downtown footprint. How do we get retail, workforce housing, you know, in the downtown area. I'd love to see in some of our spaces down there an opportunity for employees who work in the downtown area to maybe pay a little different amount, work in downtown. So we've got some opportunity to make smaller our physical footprint, but that's going to take some dollars to get that whole process rolling.
And I do think that the public would look very highly on divesting any unused buildings and facilities, because those have value.
Absolutely.
And especially if it's in the downtown region right now, there's plenty of people that want to come in and have an opportunity to get a building like that.
Well, and we'd love that. And I keep looking at these again. The models of these high rises are very different. We look at something now, we repurpose it, redesign it, or build a new one, and there's tiers. You know, I think, do we put some retail on the bottom, get some tax revenue going? Do we have office space? Do we have workforce housing, or, you know, market rate housing in one building? Let's take advantage of those opportunities and really, you know, be thoughtful about what we can highest and best use downtown.
And that's a great point. There's going to be options, and that means there's going to be decisions. And a lot of those decisions will hopefully be guided by you and your team, and the board will get on board and support
those
as well.
And community input, absolutely.
And obviously, the community, sure. You'll reach out to the community too. You mentioned RTA next. I think one of the things that people forget is that, unlike Maricopa County, Pima County has 36% of our citizens living in unincorporated Pima County.
It would be the fourth largest city in Arizona, if you just looked at the population of unincorporated Pima County. Yeah.
And the fear on the RTA next, and as a member of the State Transportation Board, and we saw the numbers again this week, or last week at our meeting on Friday, infrastructure funding's not readily available. The legislature just clawed a bunch back. IJA was a 5-year infusion. So much of it regionally is the key to continue not only allowing the county to use their other maintenance or fund transportation funds on maintenance, but it allows us to also expand for that growth that we are going to have. People are moving to Pima County. That's happening.
Correct.
What do you believe the role of the county is going to be in helping advocate for an RTA next? And are you confident that we're going to get to one? You can answer those.
Hopefully we'll run out of time before I get back. I think, well, and Ted, we've been working together on this committee for a while, and you've seen, you know, Rex Scott is our representative on RTA and PAG. For me, it's been for us to continue to focus on the regional approach. This is not simply an additional half cent for each of the individual communities to fix those individual problems. It's to look at this area as a region and understand what it is we need to do. And what does that mix look like? There will be transit. There's critical transit components, not just what we think of as the normal bus routes, but special needs transportation, you know, dial-a-rides for individuals who have no other ability to get around this community. So transit is a critical piece of that. What I've seen our role is, and I think our staff has been working with the RTA staff and other jurisdictions to be real candid over the last couple of years, keep going back to the drawing board. We get to a meeting and we hear that there might not be unanimous support for something. Let's try to figure out what we need to tweak. How do we need to adjust? The county has taken numerous projects that would benefit just the county off the table in order to try to get to yes. Because ultimately, any projects in the county, if you will, regardless of the jurisdiction. But I think our great role has been to really try to help look at what those projects might be, because there's an art and a science. You know, the science is, where do we need the roads? What does that look like? What's the capacity? The art is, how do we distribute those projects geographically around the area to make sure that there's something for everyone?
Well, I'm believing we're close, and
okay.
I'm going to be the eternal optimist, and I think we will get there, because we need to get there.
Have to.
It will be problematic otherwise. All right, we've hit some of the critical infrastructure issues. We're going to take a break right now. That was Jan Lesher, the Pima County Administrator. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning. Welcome back. Matt always knows how to keep me hopping behind on this side of the glass, so that's great. So, guest today has been Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator. We've talked about a lot of her feelings about the critical infrastructure and things going on in this region. Let's talk a little bit about an issue that's really prevalent has gotten a lot of attention, and they're separable, but they're kind of the same too. And that's the homelessness situation and some of the crime issues that maybe have arisen. The county's been given a lot of credit, your signs on the medians to try to discourage folks from panhandling the median. So the county's been getting some credit for what they're doing, but it's still a countywide program. This homelessness does not know city bounds. So what do you see as things that the county should continue to do, or there's some things that you think you need to expand to try to help address this?
Huge issue.
Solve this problem in 2 minutes.
Okay,
no kidding.
2 minutes. such a huge issue, you know, and unfortunately, you've heard me say it, Ted, I think it is similar to the two things, right, that people in Tucson hate. I've talked about it before. We hate sprawl and we hate infill. Which is just that way of saying we want an answer to some of the homelessness, but we don't want people to live near us. You know, there's so many problems. But what's happened in the last few years with the addition of fentanyl into the equation is day and night.
Oh, absolutely.
And I watch, you know, we've been working with the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. We've worked with so many different groups. We'll talk to anybody impacted by this. But when you have businesses that are mom and pop businesses and small strip malls that are considering losing their business, which is their family legacy and the future for their children, because of individuals on their front porch doing drugs, we got a real problem. What we've been looking at is the baby steps. Yes, we changed the signs to encourage people to donate. We've actually been working with the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. There's a specific fund to which people can give rather than keeping people on the median, which ultimately is just extraordinarily unsafe. We've developed a transition center. The hope is when people are getting out of the jail, they have to go through a transition center and talk to people who may be able to provide wraparound services, get them off drugs, et cetera. Probably the best opportunity to get somebody to change their mind about something like that is right after they're coming out of jail. We call it the gift shop. You have to go through the gift shop on the way out. But we look at it, there's a criminal justice piece of this. Are people being arrested? Are they being prosecuted? You know, what are the sentencing guidelines? It is such a huge part of the equation. We have really focused in the county side, I think, on sort of the criminal justice piece of it, because we have the superior courts and some of those issues.
Right.
We've not built homeless facilities. We've tried to look at how we can amend Title 36, which is the statutes that allow for involuntary commitment.
And I think that's a huge piece.
Big piece,
Jen.
Of this. Yeah.
If there's a carrot and stick approach, will work. Different ones work for different people, but
yeah, there's no one size fits all on this one at all.
Absolutely. I've told a story before about I had a friend whose older brother got into a fight and seriously hurt somebody in high school really bad, and his choice was jail or the Marines. Well, joining the Marines turned him around.
Yeah,
it made him a different person. It helped control some of the anger issues and vent things, and people will respond when they're facing choices.
And we hope to take advantage of that, if you will. But there's, I've talked to some folks in the community who say, well, we don't have it in my area, homeless problem. Well, if you don't right now, you're going to, I think. It's everywhere now.
I live in Oro Valley, okay, and you hear all the time that, we don't see many homeless. I think there's been one gentleman up there that we sometimes see.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter, you talk to Chief Riley mm-hmm. up there, and guess what? They're taking advantage of the transit. They're riding up there, and we're having more and more storefront crime occurring.
Yeah.
Coal is when they walk in and walk out with a bunch of stuff. It's going to have us, and I think the fentanyl issue is one that we absolutely have to address.
Huge. That's really driving this. Yeah.
Now, here's one. Hmm. Poverty in Pima County and the city of Tucson is significantly higher. Yes, it's been trending down a little bit as we've come out of the pandemic and all that, but the fact of the matter is we're still higher than Maricopa County. We're still higher than the rest of the state of Arizona. What role do you see the county playing in both maybe the economic development side or in addressing poverty directly?
Two parts of that. And first, I think what we did develop, the county board adopted the Prosperity Initiative, which is 13 points that are not designed to...
Some of them, which I like, some of them I don't, but yeah, we'll talk those later.
That's, well, good. You like some of them. I'll take that. they're not designed to... they're not ordinances. They're not items that are designed to tell a business or an individual how to operate. We hope they're guidelines for the county. So we're now looking at if those are our goals, how do we line the county budget up to meet those goals? And I think a lot of it's focusing on early education, and education obviously a critical piece of this, making sure that that we have an opportunity for people to come out of poverty. Can we help with, with housing, those sorts of issues? The economic development piece is where I think we can also do a lot. You and I have had this conversation, Ted. I said to me, having run the Department of Commerce, what I used is that the way you describe economic development is our goal is to increase the per capita income of every individual. It's not just to bring in a job. It's not to bring in a job that is not consistent with the desires of the community or a low-rate job. We're bringing in business and the right kinds of business so that the income of every individual in this community rises. And that's what our goal is. We look at the research, Aerospace Research Campus, how we work with Raytheon, and those kinds of businesses. How do we make sure the development going on in the Oro Valley area and so many others are jobs that aren't heavy water users, are consistent with our area, and help every single individual earn more and strive.
That's the bottom line. Poverty is a measurement of household income.
Yep.
We have to address that side of it, good quality jobs, and we need the critical infrastructure to do that. So, Jan Lesher, appreciate your leadership at Pima County, and appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for everything. Glad to be here today. I appreciate it.
All right. You've been listening to Jump in Tucson. Tune in tomorrow with Grant Kruger at 9 o'clock. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week.